Thank you. Not so difficult, huh? So this morning we want to share about taking care of the teacher, which Thay already began to speak about yesterday. And this breathing is a chance for us to do that. And I know something that makes me very happy whenever I share mindfulness with children is when we get to breathe together. When I can also have the experience of coming into myself, of coming to touch the peace in myself with the children, with the young people. So these kind of exercises where we share mindful breathing or stopping or being aware of our body, being aware of our senses, it's also a chance for us to stop and to take care of ourselves. So I want to share a story of a teacher who decided to bring mindfulness into her life, into her classroom, in a maybe unusual way. She came into her class and she said, "Dear students, in order to be peaceful and happy, I have to take care of myself. And so every day, to begin the class, I'm going to invite a sound of the bell, and then I'm going to sit in silence for 2 minutes. And after that, I will invite another sound of the bell. And you can do whatever you want during that time, but that's what I'm going to do so that I can offer you the best of myself." And so the students, the first few days, this was also a very difficult class for her, a class that it was very troublesome. And so the first few days, the children continued to do what they would normally do, making noise and talking to each other or goofing around. But after a few days, some of the children began to sit quietly with her. And after a few weeks, all of the students were sitting quietly with her for those 2 minutes. So she was somehow creating space, taking space for herself, and it began to also create a space, a healing space for the students. And she didn't necessarily intend that. She was really just trying to practice for herself. But I like this story because it shows us that when we do take care of ourselves, we are taking care of other people. When we really take our own well-being seriously and don't see it as a luxury, then naturally it spreads out and it includes others. It makes us better able to serve, better able to be there for others. I have a little bit of experience in this area. As monks and nuns, we do have a protected life in some ways, but we also have a lot of responsibilities and can also get quite busy and stressed, believe it or not. We don't yet practice all the things our teacher teaches us. We're not capable of doing them all yet, so we still get caught up in our projects and our worries. But luckily we have a community around us that also helps us remember. But this winter, I live in Germany at the European Institute of Applied Buddhism near Cologne. But this winter I had the chance to do our 3-month winter retreat in Plum Village, because I felt I need to take care of myself and not be so active and teaching and offering in the center where I live. And so I decided to also write to my friends and family and to let them know I would be taking a break from email and internet for those 3 months, and going off of Facebook and trying to give myself that kind of space to rest, to come back to myself. And I was moderately successful. For the most part, I disengaged, but there were some things I still needed to take care of, mostly within the community, because while I was there, we had a retreat for teachers that I was also helping to organize. So there were things that came with that. But it was kind of a big thing to experience that life is actually possible when I'm not completely engrossed in this kind of world of always being accessible, of always being, you know, knowing what's in my inbox. And and I really noticed how the less I was on the computer, the happier I was. It was a very clear inverse correlation. And the more my mind felt peaceful and calm. It's given me some interesting material to work with now on the other side of those 3 months. Of course, I have things I have to take care of back in Germany now that I'm back there, but how much do I really need to be taking in, you know? So I went off of all of my petition lists and, you know, kind of the activism that I really do appreciate being part of. But I'm not sure if I want to do all that now that I've had a break from it. It's been an interesting perspective to have, like how to keep creating this sense of a protected space where I can really care for myself. So there's a story that Thay tells about this. When he had a hermitage in France, it was a beautiful day, and he took his picnic and went out to enjoy the forest. And after he had eaten his lunch, a storm was coming, and he saw the darkening clouds, and He knew he had to go back to his hermitage because he had left all the doors and windows open because it was sunny and warm. So when he got back, it was very cold and it was windy and raining, and the wind had blown all the papers around in the hut, and it was a mess inside. And so the first thing he did was close all the windows, close the doors, start the fire, rearrange his papers, and he made the hut cozy again as the wind and rain was howling outside. And so this is also us sometimes. Sometimes we encounter storms, maybe sudden storms, and we need to come back to our hermitage and close the windows and doors so that we can make our inside peaceful again and cozy for ourselves. So the practices that we are learning here this weekend, maybe the ways we're already living in our daily life, at home, at school, are methods to help us close the windows and doors, to create a protected space inside, to allow ourselves to be our best, so that we can offer that to our students. Well, first, we can offer that to ourselves, so that we can offer that to our families, so that we can offer that to our students and colleagues. There's a good friend of ours here from India, Shantam Seth, who also has organized that retreat I was telling you about last night, the retreat for about 400 teachers in India. So he has been also very interested in how to bring mindfulness into education, and he shared with me that in his research of many, many top schools in different countries around the world, what the research shows is it's not the curriculum, it's not the some special structure that a school takes, some special system that a school uses that makes these schools so good. What they all have in common, regardless of their methods, is the quality of the teachers. Okay, he's nodding his head, so I quoted him correctly. So, I think it's just that just underlines how important it is what we do with every single present moment that life offers us, what we do with every breath and every step that we have the opportunity, the luck, to still be able to have, to take. So it's our presence that is what is making a difference to our students. Of course, it is our skill as a teacher, our creativity, our resourcefulness. But this ability to really take care of ourselves and to love ourselves, because that's what it is what allows us to really love our students, to love our job. And I think that's probably one of the things that all these teachers have in common. You know, they love their students, they love their job, and that comes from some place, something inside. At a retreat in the U.S. a few years ago, Tai was giving a talk to the children because in all of our big retreats we include families with children. So we may have 60 or so children and another 20 or 30 teenagers at a big retreat of 1,000 people. So he starts the first part of the Dharma talk by speaking to the children. And he was saying that in all of our retreats, what the children benefit from the most is not anything that's said, is not the teachings, not the songs, not the activities. He said it's the noble silence that the community generates together. So a group of people sitting together and generating peace, generating presence, that's what the kids take home with them. That's most powerful for them. And I was just doing a weekend retreat with Sister True Virtue in the EIAB in Germany just this last weekend. We did a weekend course, and two teachers shared with us stories about this. One was leading her students, there was a nature guide, a forest ranger, leading the students through a forest. And he said, okay, now everyone's going to find a tree and sit under a tree without talking for 10 minutes. And the teacher was like, oh no, they're never going to be able to do this. That's so long. But she just didn't say anything. So all the students went and found a tree. And they sat there silently for 10 minutes. And when he said, okay, we're done, many students said, can't we continue? Can we do another 10 minutes? And she was so surprised. And another teacher reported the same thing, that she was very surprised at how much her students appreciated the silence, wanted the silence. So everything that we're doing here, it's not some exotic thing under the name of Buddhism or Eastern religion, or it's just a very natural and simple way for us to touch what's already in us, for children, young people to touch what's already in them, that they're often just dying to have the chance to experience, for someone to come and give them the opportunity to be with that very beautiful, still, wise, kind and compassionate part of them. So it's like in the drawing Tai did yesterday. It's giving ourselves a chance to go inward. It's giving our students a chance to first go inward, because it's that inward arrow that allows us to really fully, with all of our integrity, to do the arrow outward to another person. Because, we are the most important person in our life. It's not someone else. There's a beautiful dialogue between King Prasenajit and his queen. This is a contemporary of the Buddha. And he asks his wife, who is the person most dear to you? Thinking she's going to say him. And she says, well, I am. I'm the person most dear to me. And that wakes him up and he realizes, yes, I'm the person most dear to me too. So we are all the person most dear to ourselves. If we really take the step towards ourselves, then we can truly cherish the people around us. So at this retreat, we offered, after Christmas and between New Year's, a few months ago in Plum Village, we had about 75 teachers coming from all over. At the last circle sharing, one of the teachers shared with us that she had come to the retreat expecting to learn kind of like at a seminar to learn methods and helpful things she could put into her curriculum, kind of some kind of thing she could take home with her. And then she was, I was on the very last day, because we had been offering at the meals, we would eat together and we would offer some mindfulness practices as we were eating. And she realized on the last day how she hadn't been at all present for her eating. And when she really stopped and was able to just be there with her food, she had this profound realization that for most of her life, she hadn't really eaten. She had just been on autopilot, chewing, swallowing, but not really tasting and appreciating her food. And she was really able to do that. And she had this wondrous meditation and really enjoying each bite of her food. And she said, actually, what I realized I needed to learn here was how to eat. So I think many of the teachers who came realized it wasn't about getting something that they could then do in their classrooms, but actually integrating something into their own life, into their own, the cells of their bodies, and that through that, really deepening, that's what changes, that's what helps the students, is when it's embodied in us, mindfulness and peace and being there. And I'm going to let my brother Fabium continue.
dear Thay, dear elder brothers and elder sisters, dear friends, thank you for joining us. It's interesting, first time sitting here with many eyes looking. Feels like a Greek play or something. Get my brother from London, Hingim, come down here, do their Shakespeare. It's quite an amazing place that we're here. And just feel so fortunate to all our friends and our teachers who have opened this space, this school for us to use, for us to be in the school environment and not have to teach or to be a student, to just be, to touch that. And I think you probably are noticing that. That's what I feel when I walk around the halls and in the classroom as well. When we first came here, already my eyes started just going, wow. And I think we all felt that as we came. I think for me, for us to gather is already a wonderful support for teachers and for the world, I think, coming together with the aspiration to bring mindfulness, to bring humanness to the classroom, bring heart and so on. I think that's maybe why we're here. And I don't think we're here to take notes and go back with more. I think we're here to touch this. I'm not very good with the doing curriculum stuff. I just I share from my experience of being in the monastery and being under pressure and being, you know, and learning about myself. And I think that's I was reflecting what how that relates to teachers. I've never taught before in a classroom. I visited many classrooms before. I visit my brother's classroom. And I see it's. I see from emailing with him and visiting him that he has the same aspiration that I do, which is to influence the world in a good way. He's very patient. He should have become a monk, and I'm not very patient. He's always the one in the family who doesn't say anything until the end. You know, it's very tough. Usually in our family, we just jump on each other with words. And he'd sit there, and, you know, it was annoying for him to sit there and not say anything. But he became a teacher, and he loves his student. But I know after a couple of years, he started to have a lot of problems, not with his class or his students, but with the other teachers and the administration and all the pressure because of the cuts and things. And so he started to really have doubts a little bit whether he can continue. So I keep emailing him and we chat. And I try my best to encourage him to stay. And he teaches at inner school. And he chose not to, he was offered to teach at a private school, but he felt like it's in the inner school that, and I see that's very, wow, you know, it makes my body tingle when I hear that because it's tough. And he teaches in LA and it's very tough. And they're all bilingual, and it's really tough. So he has to play the father, the teacher, and the police. Sorry. Yeah, in LA, you have to play the police too. Maybe you're lucky you don't have to hear, but, you know, there's a lot of things that go on in the classroom in an urban environment like that. So I really feel for him. So when I'm up here, I really speak to my brother. And I brought a picture of my nieces and nephew on this trip to remind me what I'm doing, why I'm doing things. And I think that's mainly it, is that we just have to remember why we became teachers, why we became monks and nuns. We get pocket money. We don't call it a salary, so we're not going to get wealthy. We're not going to be on the, you know, Time magazine. I think that's we're in it for, you know, I think that reason, and we all know. And I think for us, taking care of the teacher, taking care of our environment, and taking care of our family, taking care of these things is, we all want that. We have that intention. But as you know, the intention is just, you know, half the block. And the rest is for us, we have to train to hold to our intention. And this is where I see our training as monastic cross with teachers. We train to sit still, even if we have an idea, a thought, we want to contribute. Oh, it's a good idea. But we train ourselves just to sit there, not react. That's tough. You have good intention, but sometimes you voice it, and it creates a lot of disturbance and a lot of disharmony. And this is the way we've been trained in school. It's like, me. And it's actually this training that is causing a lot of difficulty. And I was trained like that. So in the monastery, in a way, I have to retrain or like to remove a lot of that training, you know, to be intention. When you hear the bell, like, where's the bell? You know, we train that because, you know, when the school bell rings, I don't know if they have school bells here, but you constantly, you know, I remember throwing books in the bag and just rushing to the next class. So it's this kind of reaction is just innate in our body, in our mind, in our consciousness. And I think it's this kind of energy that that kind of goes not against, but it is an obstruction to us taking care of ourselves. Because we want to take care of ourselves. We want to go home early and get a good rest, but we still continue, and then on and on. And so our it's the same thing in the monastery. Want to achieve something, and that wanting to achieve, that grasping, actually is the obstruction to our health, to our way of being. And I think as teachers, as for myself, it's still an ongoing process of training, because we were always meeting new situations and so on. On this tour, or even for this retreat, is a challenge for us, because we're organizing it half conference, half retreat. And you know, today you'll experience what it practice mindfulness on the move, intention through the tube, and time pressure. How can you do this and still not lose yourself? How to be in the soap tube and rush, but not really rush. You're moving fast, you get there, hey, okay. I missed the what do you call it? I missed the train. Great. Or you get there, I missed that. And then the whole ring of thought goes. But we missed the train the other day. We sat there, oh, great. My brother's like, wow, wonderful. You know, look at this beautiful brick. Wow. This, you know, it's so nice to go with my brother and sister. They're so silly. But it's that kind of thing we want to bring in the classroom. And I know it's tough because you have curriculum, you have things to correct, but we have to, I keep telling my brother, you gotta keep doing it. And I remember visiting his class and I taught them how to sing a song and do a flower and offer a flower to themselves and to each other with their hands, and to go home for homework to offer it to their mother and father and see what happens to their face. And the children loved it. We sang, I'm blooming as a flower, fresh as the dew. And boy, it was so wonderful. And I remember the kids going out to lunch, they all wanted a hug. And one girl said, can we give you a hug? And I was like, and I looked over my brother, I was like, mm-mm. And I said, why not? And he said, we're not allowed to hug. And he didn't want the kids to know that, you know. And I was like, okay, you go stand out the door. So I gave a few children a hug, and everyone lined up. So I gave each one a hug going out. Yeah, it's so wonderful. And then I asked my brother, yeah, and he said there's like a policy in school, you're not supposed to touch the children and hug them and so on. And that was my first time. I was like, really? Wow. But it's, you know, it's, I mean, I'm not encouraging do that if your school don't do that. I don't know why I share that, but I was very moved by that kind of a kind of need from the children. Once you, it's the way you are in the classroom. I think that's what it was. It's the way I shared and the way the classroom was conducted. And there was something else being learned from the children. And I think we all know that as teachers. I don't have to share that. This is just an example. And I think we've all touched that. And I think we have to protect that. That we call in our monastic, in the monastery, the bodhicitta, our mind of love. Our mind of being, a mind of being human. And I think that's, if we can do that with ourselves, to protect ourselves, so that we don't, you know, become insincere or to do things that are against that nature. And that's when we slowly kind of wilt as a teacher. They call burnout. And we do have that too in the monastic training. Sometimes it's tough. So we always have to come back to the first circle to make sure we know why we're here, why we're on this tour, where our children are, where our cousins, where our family are, and how this relates to that, how this relates to the world. In our classroom, or when we're speaking with a child, it's not less important than going to speak to the principal or the head of the district. I think that's the tough challenge. On the tours like that, sometimes you come across a brother and sister, no, no, it's okay, it's okay. And you kind of like make that, you're not really present. So the training of breathing, walking, eating is to fundamentally train that energy inside of us that a teacher called mindfulness. So mindfulness is not a technique. It's very popular in America right now. It's a curriculum. Mindfulness can make you successful. Mindfulness and so on. For us, mindfulness is just an energy. And the way we use it, it could be right mindfulness or wrong mindfulness. But it's just an energy. So when we cultivate enough that energy, we can really be present with someone. And we'll know what to say and what not to say. And we'll know that to react or not to react. Sometimes we're a good teacher, it's an obstruction. It's kind of strange, huh? When you're a good teacher, you know, maybe you have to be the student that day. You have to be playful that day. In the monastery, we have different ways of looking at our life in the community. And there's practice when we train, when we find ways to nourish ourselves, to transform our suffering that we all have. We all have something transmitted from our ancestors, from our parents, from our society. We have to practice to look deeply at that, look deeply at our suffering. It's from that that our true happiness, true peace comes from. It's not from the outside. So the practice is a continual, whether you're eating, whether you're walking, you're training to meditate and to practice to look at that. Look at why you're doing that. Sometimes it's underneath something else, a different motive. So the more we practice, the more we see ourselves clearly. And so it's that all that habit. You didn't get attention when you were a child. That's why now you want all the attention. So when you practice and you look deeply, you begin to see, why are you not so comfortable with that child? Something reminds you when you were little. So it's this practice of deep looking at ourselves. This balance with service. Service is, you know, on the desk doing things that you need to do to move, to serve. And why are you doing this? How does this relate to things? So we practice to train to serve and to remind ourselves to serve with love, to serve for others. So it's also a mental state. So to practice, to serve, to study. So I know when I was in college, there were teachers, professors who didn't, well, we as students, we didn't think that they were developing. They kept doing the same thing over and over again, which is fine. But as a teacher, how are we investigating the world? How are we opening our mind as well? So as a human being, that's an innate need, I think, for us to explore, to understand, to grow. So study element. So don't be just caught with the curriculum or thing. How can we make it so it's exciting? How can we get through to that one student that is difficult? So it's our study. When we study a person, when we study a book, when we study the world, when we... So it's that investigative mind that we're looking at. And I think that's a very important element. So practice, service, study, how to keep being inquisitive about our students, about our world, about education. And fourth, play. I love that part. Playfulness. How to bring playfulness into our classroom. Yes, this has got to be done in 15 minutes. But does it have to be like so? It could be, you can introduce that. I remember I had a calculus teacher. He would bring things in the class that's really strange, and he's a weird character. But he'd bring in books, Flatland, and he'll bring in a handout that has nothing to do with calculus. And we have a test next week for AP, and he brings up things and just throw our mind off. He doesn't want us to be thinking about the test. And when we solve a problem, he just gets so happy, he'll jump up. It's those teachers that you remember. You don't remember what you learn in calculus, do you? You remember the teacher. And what they transmit to you, their love of teaching. When we get a problem, he'd throw the chalk across the board and go flying all over the place, and everyone look at each other like, wow. And I remember that. It's a very, you see a teacher, a human being, fully at his full happiness. It's the happiness of a teacher. And so the playfulness. So we bring these elements and we mix them together to practice, to train ourselves, to look deeply, to touch happiness, to take a walk outside of the class and look at the flower. What does this have to do with correcting the papers? Sitting there to enjoy your lunch in silence? Practice, service, when you go back to the desk, when you do this. Keep in mind the other elements, the other three elements. The practice, study, and play. And all this under the umbrella of being. How to be. I remember as a teenager, we had friends that we liked to hang out. And I translate teenage language as kicking it. You know, you kind of like just put your leg up. Or just chill. Like we have a room of friends when we're resting. And if someone comes in with the agenda, the teenager or my friends would say, hey, just chill. I don't know if they do that in England, sorry. But it's that kind of feeling. It's like when you don't have an agenda, you just learn to be there, to be present. Not to come in there and say, oh, now I'm practicing. Leave me alone. You know, that's kind of, you know... Same thing, you know, when you work, you're so intense in it, like teachers there, it's just like becoming a new form of disease. We're so in our computer, we don't even know our surrounding. We don't even know our body. I'll bet you in 20 years, it will become a new kind of disease or addiction or something like that, because you see it. They're so, it's very... Something happens to how to learn to be present, to be with ourselves, to be with our breath. This morning we sat, and Sister Denim shared with us a guided meditation. That's the training, to learn to be without an agenda, without having to get down all the information. Just be there in your body and be okay. This is so very basic in our practice as we train in the monastery. It's very tough, especially when you have a good idea. When you have a good idea during a meeting, oh boy. Yeah. So the suffering that you hear Buddhism talk is like suffering, and then, you know, how to get out of suffering and how to touch and end suffering. In the monastery, it's not like the big despair kind of like, it's also suffering in the little stuff. How you turn on the water and you have to, it's this small little anxiety suffering. And we see it as you practice more. You see it in yourself, how you rush because all of a sudden you have an idea that you have to get there. And you rush. You know, you put on your shoes a little differently because you want something. That's a kind of suffering. You know what I mean? I don't know, do you think that's suffering? Maybe you don't think that's suffering. But it causes a lot of stuff happen in our body, as the scientists are discovering, and a lot of imbalance in our bodies because of all these little triggers, like mice, you know, running around and zap, zap. So it's we want to train our children, train ourselves first, so we're aware of that. We can't teach this to the children if we're not aware of it. My brother wanted to teach the bell, and he bought a bell from the monastery, went, and he did it for a couple of weeks, and then he stopped. And I asked him why, and he said, well, I really don't stop when I listen to the bell, when I hear a bell or the cell phone. So why should I teach it to my children? And so that until he can do it himself, then he would do it. Share it with his students. And I thought that was very, I respected that. So I stopped asking him to do it. And I said, okay, when you're ready. And so this is an element too, when we can touch a little bit of what it means to stop and to be in the present moment, then we know what we're talking about and we know what we're sharing. And I think that's where the practice, the training, we would like to train the teachers in that way. So maybe not in the monastery format, in like this kind of format. We've organized the retreat so that we can all touch that. And all the topics it's basically all in our time together. I mean, mindfulness in daily life is one of the workshops. Transforming stress and pressure at work. Deep listening and compassionate speaking, reconciling difficult relationships, the practice of beginning anew, cultivating joy and happiness, creating group support, sangha, and overcoming fears and separation and loss, overcoming fears of separation and loss. This is the whole, condensed cliff notes of our whole training in the monastery, all of that. So depending on which workshop you go to. And so this morning for us is to share our time together. When we're here, we're practicing. When we walk, when we eat, when we sit, is to cultivate that energy of mindfulness that helps us to be present. Nine, when we're standing, when we're at the tube, we'll have a chance to practice together, to go together as a group. So it's a little bit of urban practice. For those of you who come from far away, you're looking for maybe a meditative in the meadows and with clouds. Well, welcome to the real world. No, I'm kidding. So we'll do it together. And I think it's that togetherness. Like when I travel with my brother and sister, there's no way you're going to not be playful. And so we'll support each other with that. How much can we practice being present, being mindful without being, and rushing? How can we rush without being rushful? No? Rushful? Rushed. And I think it's possible. I think I've experienced it at the airport with my brothers and sister. So, I don't know if I made my, it was very structured or anything, but I just share for you from my heart. And I think that's, I think that's why all my brothers and sisters are here, for us to share our little experience that we have in training, the practice of meditation, of mindfulness. And we hope that you will really take that part, the training part, seriously. Don't take yourself seriously, but take the training and incorporating that yourself into your school, and into your life, at home, with your family. I know there's we'll end it here with the three sounds of the bell, and thank you for listening.